right wing. Just right. The Rick Smith Show.
So our quote of the day from former Exxon Mobil CEO and current Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. He said, "We rededicate ourselves to holding to account any and all who commit crimes against the innocent anywhere in the world." Is this the Trump doctrine? Is this the new foreign policy? Is this where we go? And is this a good idea? Here to talk a little bit about what happened on Thursday. I know over the weekend, lots of golf. Thursday there was bombing. Friday there was gloating and, you know, just exuberance. And then golf. I've asked Sarah Kendzior to come talk with us about, well, what's going on there and share some of the thoughts. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So a weekend of golf, you know, kind of get the excitement of, you know, blowing some stuff out of the way.
Yeah, clearly that's the priorities. I always envisioned as a child that I would have a president shooting missiles directed from his golf resort in Florida.
So look at this. I mean, you know, here's the problem, I think, for the left. And I've had this conversation a number of times over the weekend. There are people who look at those images that we saw and say, we have to do something. We have to act, Sarah. And that's all the president was doing.
Well, I mean, there's, you know, legitimacy to the claim that we have to act. People have been making that claim for 6 years, and this is not the first time that Assad's deployed chemical weapons. I think the question is, you know, what are the intentions of the Trump administration? What are the qualifications of it? What's the plan? And, you know, what are they going to do in the future? Because, you know, this is a group that's a mix of incompetence and warmongers and nuke fetishists and all of the above. And so, you know, I think most people are concerned with, you know, is this the group of people that we really want to be in charge of handling one of the most complicated and sensitive international crises, you know, in recent history?
Don't you think that's a bit much to ask from this administration to actually, oh, I don't know, have a plan?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that quote you just read from Tillerson was, you know, amusing in a sort of horrific way, because that intention to protect the vulnerable doesn't even extend to people in the United States. So, you know, I don't trust them with, you know, this desire to protect the vulnerable abroad either.
All the while, what they're doing budget-wise is they're cutting foreign aid, which, you know, again, sends kind of a mixed message, don't you think?
Yeah, they're cutting foreign aid. They're cutting aid to women and children, you know, allegedly the, you know, children that Trump was so moved about when he saw pictures. You know, the children that are alive are ones that he's not letting in the United States. And he bragged about how he wouldn't let Syrian refugee children into the United States. They haven't reversed that policy. And so, you know, there is not much to the strike other than a photo op and a sort of like, you know, hey, we didn't do nothing this time. You know, we did a thing, and it, you know, wasn't a completely catastrophic thing, because, you know, I'm fairly sure he had Mattis and McMaster, you know, actually organizing the logistics of it versus himself. I don't know whether that will necessarily be the case next time.
And you plan on there being a next time?
Oh, I think so. I mean, you know, people are forgetting it earlier in the week, you know, before the chemical attack and Trump's response, they were flirting with, you know, nuclear provocations with North Korea. You know, Tillerson has released a very ominous sounding, very terse statement about how, you know, we're not going to stand for this anymore. He said that diplomacy is off the table. He's, you know, or somebody has gutted the State Department, allowing all these crucial diplomatic positions to remain unfilled. And so it doesn't seem that, you know, diplomacy or even strategy is something that they prioritize. I think that they're very excited, you know, to use all their shiny new weapons. I think this is something that Trump, who got everything he wanted in life, you know, was born into a life where he could buy anything he wanted, was not able to do. He's never been able to fire off missiles before. He's never been able to fire off nukes before, although he's talked about it since, you know, at least the mid-80s. And so, you know, yeah, I definitely don't think this is the end. I think that this was, you know, a pretext, you know, for a beginning that is going to go down a very bad road.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that the cartoons I saw over the weekend that caught my attention, made me laugh, was, you know, there's one of Putin and Assad. You know, Putin's on the phone with the U.S. saying, you know, hey, when the America wants to attack, what time's good for you? Because evidently we kind of laid it out to him, saying, hey, we're coming, and, you know, we're going to have this fireworks display, so you might want to move your stuff out of the way.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's true. And it's complicated because, you know, on one hand, there's a legitimate reason to not want to kill Russian soldiers who are in Syria. You know, we are not at war with Russia. That would be a, you know, a giant incident. At the same time, you combine them with consulting with Russia and not consulting with Congress, you know, not actually going through the, you know, the formal processes that a president would usually go through before launching this kind of initiative. That's troubling. And there's certainly no sign that the connection between Russia and the United States, you know, is closed. Earlier in the week, you know, we learned that they are trying to open a secret back channel earlier in the year. That story got some play, and then, you know, this, of course, occurred. And I think it's in both their interests to sort of keep up this pretense of acrimony. And I also think, you know, it's not a all-or-nothing thing. I think there is some tension between the U.S. and Russia, but I also think there's, you know, been collaboration between the Trump camp and the Kremlin for a long time. You know, this is the kind of thing that's been documented and that we hear about in the hearings. So right. I would, you know, encourage people not to sort of view it as a, you know, completely black and white situation.
Well, nothing's ever completely black or white. But, you know, in looking at this, because immediately on Thursday, I'm going, well, I'm glad, I guess we did something, but this isn't going to help. This was a show. This was the shiny thing that changed the topic, because what we're no longer talking about is we're no longer talking about the theft of a Supreme Court seat. We're no longer talking about the Russia investigation. We're no longer talking about the horrible health care act that they wanted to ram through. We're not talking about a whole bunch of things that on Wednesday we were focused on. And today, well, we're evidently doing an about face, and the Trump doctrine is, hey, let's go bomb everywhere.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's pathetic. I think eventually this is going to wear off once they realize that this strike accomplished nothing, and especially if they go on another military incursion that works out a lot worse, you know, down the road. But, yeah, you know, there is a really disturbing abrupt turn, you know, in the press coverage. The LA Times had ran this very, you know, kind of sanctimonious series of editorials proclaiming the obvious, you know, that Trump might be, you know, not on the level. He might be a sociopath. He seems like an authoritarian. He lies compulsively. He can't be trusted in a position of authority. Then he struck Syria, and they come back, and they're like, oh, well, we give him a B. He's actually a pretty good president. And I'm just like, you know, what the hell is wrong with you? Like, nothing has changed. You know, Trump didn't magically change overnight into some sort of military genius or, you know, statesman or even somebody remotely trustworthy to be in this position of power. And, you know, of course, cable news did the exact same thing. I'm sure you've seen the clip of Brian Williams and, you know, other cable pundits gushing over the, you know, the strikes and the images of military action. And I think they're just relieved to be in familiar territory. You know, unfortunately, yep. That familiar territory is like the Iraq War, which is a giant disaster. But, you know, this is the kind of subject matter they're accustomed to discussing instead of, for example, is our president more loyal to a foreign country than he is to his own?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I can't tell you how sick I've become overhearing people, you know, this is what made Donald Trump presidential. I mean, we heard Van Jones, and I can't pronounce Fareed, the guy on CNN. I can't pronounce his name.
Fareed Zakaria, Zachariah, something like that.
You know, coming out saying, this now, presidential. And I'm going, wait a second. How many times are we going to do that? How many times is he going to do something and we're going to say, now, this was it. This was the moment that Donald became president.
Yeah, I mean, that's why, you know, I'm a little skeptical that all this newfound goodwill is going to last, because we saw the exact same thing happen last month when he made a speech to Congress that, you know, basically showed he was able to read, which was actually something kind of being debated at the time, and, you know, didn't have anything incredibly racist or offensive in it. And so suddenly, yeah, he became presidential that night, too. And it was undone within about 12 hours when Jeff Sessions fell, you know, had to recuse himself and fell under suspicion for collaborating, you know, with Russia to get Trump into power. I mean, when you talk about when did Trump become president, he became president on November 8th after a massive election interference operation. And that's the, you know, the fact of it. And people can be, you know, as full of wishful thinking or willful blindness as they want, but nothing's going to change that.
Yeah, I'm with you. Do you buy the epiphany argument that, you know, he had this moment of, you know, he saw the photos and was, you know, internally, viscerally forced to act? Are you buying that?
Not at all. I mean, he's never shown an ounce of compassion or empathy for anyone in his life. You know, as I said before, this is not the first time that Assad gassed people. It's certainly not the first time we've seen, you know, images of children, you know, who have been killed or injured, you know, in these atrocities. I mean, there have been so many of them. Like, I've lost count, and he's never shown any kind of reaction to it. He knew full well they existed, and yet, you know, it instituted this anti-refugee, anti-Muslim, you know, anti-Syrian refugee policy that extends to children. He bragged about how he was going to keep children out. So, you know, I don't think he cares at all. I think he realized, you know, his numbers are tanking, that people were recognizing that, you know, yes, he is exactly who he said he was, and who he is a monstrous human being, is he had to make some sort of pretense to acting like a functional human. And anyone who falls for this after this point, like, I don't know what to say. He's been in a position of, you know, he's been in the public eye for 40 years. He's been campaigning for about 2 years, you know, on a very vicious set of ideas. Those ideas haven't changed. And no, of course he didn't have a change of heart.
So it's not about the babies then, because, you know, he talked about the babies, how much he loves the babies.
Well, everybody is going to come on the side of the babies. It's a fairly uncontroversial position to take, which is why it's so alarming that he didn't take it, you know, like years earlier, that he has, that this has to come as some sort of revelation that it's bad for children to die at the hands of, you know, a dictator, or to die in a brutal sort of means. Like, that shouldn't be something that takes you this freaking long to figure out. And it's something that if you do figure out, the first thing you should think is, well, you know, how can I help these people in a humanitarian way? And a very obvious way to do that is to let Syrian refugees into the country. And that's the opposite of what he's doing.
Well, let me ask you this, because there are those who believe, well, what we should do is we should go into Syria, we should make everything right so those people stay in their home, because they don't want to be, you know, traveling all around the world. They want to stay in their home. We should make safe for them to be in their homes.
Yeah, I mean, there's merit to that argument, but you have to think of the actual context of the situation, you know, which has been going on since 2011. I think that argument, you know, was more sensible and grounded in, you know, a possible reality around 2011, 2012. At this point, you know, I'm not a Syria expert, but actual Syria experts also don't know what to do. You know, they don't know what to do to stabilize the situation. They don't know what to do to accommodate the large number of foreign parties that are now invested in Syria and have conflicting positions about Assad. You know, I've never met a refugee who didn't want to go home. You know, I know a lot. I work, you know, in court sometimes as an expert witness for refugees. And, you know, yes, ideally everyone wants to be home and with their families. But I think above all, people want safety. You know, they want to be able to stay alive. And so I think, you know, that should be the priority above anything else. And I don't think that keeping Assad in power necessarily accomplishes that. I don't think that removing him necessarily accomplishes that. There's a lot of unknowns, but I do think that opening up our doors and allowing people, you know, to come in, allowing refugees in, does offer more of an assurance of that. Although, of course, they're now coming into a U.S. with a, you know, extremely Islamophobic government, which is its own problem, but it's certainly safer than in Syria.
Yeah. So last line of questioning I've got for you then. This attack on Thursday, does this make the situation better, worse, or really have no effect whatsoever?
I don't think it has a huge effect, you know, on Syrians in terms of will their lives improve, will things be safer. I mean, this was mostly, you know, a photo op kind of strike that didn't have any kind of strategy behind it. What I worry about is the effect that it has on Trump, because he's so, you know, pathetically desperate for public approval and so obsessed with the media. You know, this is a guy who watches like 6 hours of cable news a day. And when they're all cheering this, when they're all saying, you know, he's so masterful and this is so wonderful and it's so great that he took this military action, Trump is going to want to take another military action. And he has no knowledge of strategy. He has no knowledge of, you know, geopolitical complexities. He loves using weapons, and if he knows he'll get approval for that, and that, as you mentioned, it will distract from a lot of the domestic problems that he's been having, he's going to do it again. And he may do it in an incredibly dangerous, risky, stupid fashion. And so that, unfortunately, changed, and that's why I wish that you know, the media would rein in the platitudes a little bit, and or a lot, actually, and you know, kind of think about the consequences of what they're doing. Because, you know, this is a president who gets his political advice from Fox and Friends. He has all the, you know, intel agencies, all the experts of the United States at his disposal. And that's where he chooses to go. So people should really be careful about, you know, how they're presenting this.
Yeah, any of us who watch 6 hours of cable news, especially Fox, you've got to have your heads examined. It's just amazing stuff. But if the approval ratings go up, I fear you're absolutely right, and we end up just, you know, doing this stuff all over the place.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, he wants to, and then it's also important to remember that other people in this administration, you know, who may not be batshit crazy, but who definitely have a lust for war, like a sort of more conventional neocon approach to war, also would like this to happen. And, you know, they'll use Trump and they'll use his malleability to accomplish this. And it was bad enough when we did this in 2003 with Iraq, but we were much stronger economically. We were much more stable as a country. We were not in political upheaval. Our president was not being investigated by the FBI for colluding with an adversary, you know, an adverse foreign power. You know, lots of things are different. So for them to go, you know, and engage in a bunch of military objectives now with this group of people, it's disastrous. Like, there's not even words. It's what I've worried about most. I mean, with North Korea, honestly, more than Syria, but, you know, this is still very bad.
Lots of fun days ahead. Sarah, I appreciate you taking time for us.
Oh, thank you.
Always great talking with you. Look forward to having you back again real soon. Let's take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show.
Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better. Yeah.